Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music, Dave.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Who's in the box?
Put the gun down, baby.
No, what's in the box?
Wolves have a territorial range of about 300 miles, and a kill range of 30. If we're close to their den, and if we're within that radius, then they'll come after us. How can we tell if we're close? We can't.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Your son, Mr. Thorne. The son of the devil.
They're insane.
He must die, Mr. Thorne!
You do not want to go that way.
What's that way?
Officer, sir, you do not want to go that way. We're going to the mall.
Hello, Dexter Morgan.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in, well, he's actually in Massachusetts.
Trick. Yes, I'm in Framingham, Massachusetts right now. This is Eric.
And why are you at Framingham, Massachusetts, Eric?
Well, it's a little too late to plug it now for anybody to come join us, but I'm in Framingham because starting tomorrow it will be the Scarecon horror convention. So I'm here to both I'm going to be doing a bunch of stuff. I'm going to be sitting at the Dark Discussions table. I'm going to be moderating a couple of panels. I've got a couple photo ops lined up. Should be a good time.
Absolutely. Yep, should be. And Mike, you will be joining us too. And where are you right now, Mike?
My living room.
In New York.
Oh, yes, in New York. Adjacent to Pennsylvania and New Jersey.
That's right. Yes. You're literally where the three states meet. And you'll be at ScareCon as well in approximately 17 hours or so.
Where the fuck did you get that from?
Well, 12 hours from now, and then you add another 5.
12 hours from now is 8 in the morning.
Oh, you're right. Oh, shit, I screwed that up.
24 hours from now, I'm going to be at the senior prom.
29 hours
then. 26 hours from now, 26 to 27 hours from now, I'll be at leaving the senior prom. And then hopefully 30 hours from now, I'll be in Framingham, Massachusetts, if I can stay awake the entire time.
There you go.
And if not, he'll crash in a fiery ball.
And in the state of Massachusetts, usually all the time.
Hey, this is it. Abe here. How's it going?
Abe, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. And in the state, actually, a Connecticut American.
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
I'm doing good. And right now, my neighbor is blasting music from his porch, which means he's cocktailing, because that's what we do every night here in Connecticut in the summer. So if you listeners hear music in the background, that's who it is. It's my awesome neighbor.
Okay, what type of music usually?
Well, tonight it sounds like the best of John Williams. And
worse.
Yeah, oh no, he's awesome. Like,
well, that's assuming
Broadway,
it is the John Williams and not like John Williams polka player extraordinaire.
Oh yeah, sometimes it's New Orleans jazz. I mean, but he invites us over there all the time. But I suspect the reason he's playing John Williams right now is because he knows that that's my favorite, and he knows I'm out on the back porch because our houses are close enough and my voice is loud enough that he knows I'm out here. So that's why he's playing it for me. Sometimes he'll probably do bagpipes later because he knows I like bagpipes too. So anyway.
God.
I get a concert every night. I'm a lucky girl.
All right, very good.
I'm just refraining from all comments.
Fair enough. let's see. This is Dark Discussions Podcast. And Mike, what is Dark Discussions Podcast?
It's a podcast about horror, film, fiction, and all that is fantastic. With now down to 3 spin-off podcasts. because we just finished one. But we talk about mostly horror films, fiction, and all that sort of thing, which I just said. I'm repeating myself. So anyway, we discuss about all things genre-related that happen to come to our attention. We do this every week from the comfort of our homes, usually, except for Eric, who is on the road. He's been banished. They no longer want him back in Michigan.
That's right.
He's in exile. Poor guy ended up in Massachusetts. What little is left of it.
I can't wait back on the road again.
Okay, so our email is darkdiscussions@aol.com, so please send emails. We do have an email from Scott Fox tonight that we'll read. Why do I keep on saying that?
I don't know.
Sean Fox from Canada, two emails from him. We also have a bunch of Facebook posts because I put up a thing about related to tonight's topic, and so we have about a bunch of small, you know, quick posts from there that we'll read. The Facebook group is Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, so join us there. We had a big discussion this week on such topics as Godzilla, Chucky, what else was it? Brightburn, Wonder Woman. So there's a lot of good stuff being discussed there, so join us there. Oh, of course, Game of Thrones. There's a bunch of stuff about that.
There should be a lot of happy people because the Game of Thrones talk is finally starting to die down.
Thank God.
It is. It's dying down.
I'm with you on that.
Also, the X-Men film is being discussed on there as well. So we talk pretty much a lot of genre stuff because, as Dark Discussions folks know, it's horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mystery, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, superhero films, and whatnot are all discussed.
That's superhero films.
All are discussed on the Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group.
Superhero film.
Now, Abe. Now, Abe, where can folks find us on the web?
If you visit darkdiscussions.com, you can find all the episodes we have published so far to listen to for free. We'll always have new ones on the back burner to put up as well. And if you look around inside for other links, there'll be blogs and other podcasts I've mentioned that you can check out.
That's right. And at the bottom of every page are links to the RSS feed and, of course, the email and the Facebook group. And you can follow us on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Overcast, Podbean, and wherever podcasts are found. Eric, what else can they find at the top of the darkdiscussions.com Facebook page?
Well, at the top of the page, they can find a link to a bunch of articles that people have written, including myself. And then smack dab in the middle of the page, they can find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that lets you contribute to your online artists, such as us. If you would like to help offset the cost of producing this podcast, you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you will have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover. All the entries from our patrons are drawn on a quarterly basis for us to do that topic as an episode. So for more details, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on our front page.
Excellent. And this past week, we got in a bunch of our Patreon emails for folks who are donating to Patreon. They sent us their picks for us to possibly choose when we randomly pick at the end of this quarter. We're actually doing Devil's Advocate next week, which was a Patreon pick, as a matter of fact, by Holly Masiak.
Indeed.
Yep.
If all goes according to plan.
Right, right. There's always a chance that something could happen that because we were supposed to do it a couple of weeks ago, and then there was a bunch of things that came up, and we actually skipped that week, and we postponed it for later, which will be supposedly next week. So we'll see how it goes. All right. So we have the email, and we have the Facebook posts, but we'll discuss all of them after we discuss what we're going to do tonight because they're all related to that. So, Eric, what are we going to do tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the movie currently in theaters, Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Da, 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 da. Okay, I'll stop.
I was wondering how long he was going to go.
What we are witnessing here is the return of Titans.
How many of these things are there?
17 and counting.
That's messed up.
Mothra, Rodan, Ghidorah.
Oh my.
They're moving like a pack. They're hunting. They all respond directly to an alpha. We stop this Ghidorah, we stop them all.
Is there another creature that might stand a chance against him?
My God.
Zilla.
Our planet will perish. And so will we. Unless we set Godzilla free.
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's bring him in for a beer.
No, this time we join the fight.
Run.
Godzilla's world. We just live in it.
Damn right.
So that's right. 2019 film called Godzilla King of the Monsters, as Eric said. The film is a sequel to the 2014 Godzilla. What we have here, we have a film that is directed by a pretty well-known genre director, Michael Dougherty, who did Krampus and what was it? The Halloween
Trick or Treat.
Yeah, Trick or Treat. So folks obviously know who he is. The film stars Kyle Chandler, who actually was in what was that great film?
Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Okay, yeah, that's true. But what was the film from last year, Eric? That we had as one of the top 10 other speculative fiction films.
Game Night, yeah.
That's right. Vera Farmiga is also in it, and the little girl who's now a teenager, I think, from Stranger Things, I think her name is
Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We just call her 11.
Among other people, including Ken Watanabe and Ziyi Zhang.
Bradley Whitford.
And I want to point out Ken Watanabe was in the last film. So.
Yes, he was.
As was one of the actresses. But anyway, very small role.
Ziyi Zhang was, I think. Wasn't she?
No, it's Sally Hawkins.
Sally Hawkins, thank you.
Sally Hawkins was in the... Okay, very well. Okay, so... screenplay is by Mike Dougherty and a guy named Zach Shields. And that's pretty much all I got there. Before we give our opinions and what we feel about the film, we do have the emails and the Facebook post, which will give us some things to discuss. So let's go ahead and let me read the emails first. All right. He sent them some time ago, right, like the week it came out. So that was like a few days ago, so I got to find him. Here they are. Godzilla, King of the Monsters, email. And he goes, all right, this is Sean Fox.
What does the fox say? What the fox say?
Hello, gang. As we say a sad and fond goodbye to You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast, we welcome in Godzilla and the Kaiju friends. Too bad the humans decided to tag along. I will say I completely love the cinematography and visual effect for all the sets and the Kaiju. They did an amazing job and really made the CGI not look like the usual crappy CGI that can happen in films. They made all the Kaiju feel lifelike from movements to their different abilities. I think the story itself was nothing to write home about, as I could not, for my life of me, give a flying frack about the main family. I give kudos to Eleven, a.k.a. Millie Bobby Brown. She made the best of what was given. If the story had been minus her stupid parents, I would have enjoyed it far more. I couldn't stand either of her parental units and was deeply hoping they would be taking out Kaiju style, which is sad as I usually love Vera Farmiga, but this time around I just could not empathize with her crazy arc they gave her. I like Charles Dance. Oh, that's right. He's in this. I forgot about that. As he always steals the screen with his charismatic presence. Again, the script did him no favors, but he was by far the most enjoyable human in the cast. Not quite what they were going for, but throughout the movie, I kept thinking this would be way better without this crazy story and just stick with Kaiju having fun. I went in wanting to really enjoy it. I did have an inkling of what to expect, but my overall feeling, and I could be totally off, is that Hollywood does not really get or understand Godzilla and his kin. To me, it felt very disjointed, especially with the antics of the crazy family. It felt more like that John Cusack movie, 2012, and just how ridiculous the humans were throughout and still yet survive. I am sure cheering for the protagonist humans to die in the movie, especially the main family, was not the intention of the director and writer. But in my theater, people were calling for them to die openly out loud, laughing out loud. As an action popcorn flick, it is fun, and as long as you can put aside things like making sense or wanting dumb characters to die, it is a fun movie in theaters. I saw the 3D version, and it was not bad, but not necessarily for you to enjoy Godzilla and his friends coming to your local town. In retrospect, I almost wish the director, Gareth Edwards, from the last Godzilla had been able to stay on for this one, as his vision was a little closer to what I was hoping for. But enough of my ranting. I am sincerely hoping everyone realizes that Dark Discussions podcast is the king of the podcast verse. Booyah. Until next time, and good wishes to all of you, Eric, Mike, Abe, Phil, Christy. And, oh, I had a chance to go through Good Omens, the TV series on Amazon Prime. What a treat that was with Michael Sheen and David Tennant, seemingly having genuine fun throughout the 6 episodes. I recommend it, as it is fun, engaging, and has something for everyone. Lots of cool cameos and some interesting takes on the good versus evil story. All right. He has salutations, but before we read that, he has a part two. This one's a short one. He goes, hey, gang, I always wouldn't be a Sean email without something I forgot to rant about. I would like to proudly say that the Kaiju, like any invading crew in movies and stories, while they made a deal with us Canucks and just attack everyone else, they really like our maple syrup, bacon, and our beer. This is all, and I thank you, as always, for your hard work, time, and for providing excellence in the field of podcasting, Sean from St. Albert, Alberta, Canada.
You know, if you want the Kaiju in Canada, try getting a real city. Something worth knocking down.
I was going to say, there's nothing to knock down up there.
They look at Canada and go, what's up there? Nothing.
Nothing to talk about.
Dun-dun-dun. All right. Thank you, Sean. We'll discuss some of your email as we get into some of the other stuff. Let's see here. We got stuff from Facebook. Basically, I wrote people to give us their favorite Kaiju monster and experience and whatnot. We have a few people that responded. Lacey Liu from Cut the Chase podcast. She wrote, the OG or I think original Godzilla, is the best for me. Granted, I haven't seen many, but my 7th grade English teacher every morning would play cassette tapes of Godzilla from the original, of the scene where he is destroying the city, and we would have to be in our seats for roll call before it was done playing. But the aspect of...
Or what would have happened? That's what I want to know.
Good question. She doesn't say. But the aspect of we as humans have created this monster that could destroy our planet was really fascinating, which I think the most recent films went a little too Hollywood with when trying to elaborate on that point. All right. Thank you, Lacey. Jan Dobovan, he wrote, Peter Jackson's King Kong is cool, but the 1931 is amazing and my favorite. Jesse Allen, Jan Dubovin is a Czech that lives in Sweden, I think. Jesse Allen is from Australia, and this is what he has to write. I haven't seen many Godzilla kaiju movies, just the 1998 movie, which I do enjoy despite the hate it gets. Pacific Rim, I hated. Lame characters and monster fights. The 2014 Godzilla movie I hated, like a lot of people say, not enough Godzilla. And the human characters suck, except for Bryan Cranston. But he dies in the first 30 minutes or so. Still looking forward to Godzilla, King of the Monsters, because I heard the monster fights are great. If King Kong is included, I love the original 1933 movie most. Jackson's 2005 King Kong, I love to death, saw it 5 times in the cinema. I really don't get the hate for it these days. I know people don't like the skating scene, some of the dino stuff. Skull Island was awesome, too. I hope King Kong kicks Godzilla's ass in the next movie. Amy Schuff-Rain, I think she's out of Wisconsin or Michigan. She says, hi, guys. So I spent a lot of my childhood in hotels with my awesome mom. My dad worked on the road for a machine shop, so mom and I would search for interesting things to watch in the various cities. My mom loved monster movies and Stephen King books, so we watched whatever creature feature that city played. In Chattanooga, there was host whose puppet sidekick was called Dingbat. I was a big wimp when I was little, I think because my imagination worked too well, so I was pretty convinced all the monsters could be real. Anyways, Godzilla was always a treat for me because there was a chance that baby Godzilla would be in this one. Look, I was a bored 6-year-old. He is great when you were 6. Or better yet, Mothra. Super pretty, tiny fairy ladies. As I got older, I still loved Godzilla. So fast forward to the year 2000, when I met my now husband, Ben. We had gone a few dates and were officially a couple. He calls me after hanging out with his friend and tells me how they went to see Godzilla. I was like, oh my God, you went to see Godzilla without me? And he said, well, yeah, girls don't like Godzilla. My reply, sucky girls don't like Godzilla. I like comics, monsters, and sci-fi. Why the hell would I not like Godzilla? So he swore he'd never leave me again when to see a Godzilla film. Thank you, Amy. Then she wrote, as for my favorite Godzilla monster, that's Hedorah, a.k.a. the Smog Monster. We have a plush Hedorah that is dressed in a tux that we often take to Godzilla films. And I think she actually posted it, as a matter of fact, on our Facebook group page earlier. We even got him a small kitty since he obviously likes cats since he spared the kitten by the disco in the movie. King Ghidorah is my second favorite. My current favorite for films is Final Wars. I would say that Matthew Broderick was one of the worst Godzilla films, but really that's not a Godzilla. It's a slightly large lizard movie. I don't really have a worst, though. I assume the one I loved as a kid, All Monsters Attack, will be voted the worst by many. It's not good, but I can't hate it because me and my mom had so much fun watching it. Hey, I'm going to do a Sean Fox. I've come out to be a Sean Fox in message length. Sorry. You will have to play Here Comes the Rain again. All right. And then Ben,
can I
Robin?
Just make 2 comments really quick?
Yeah, of course.
First of all, she's awesome because Hedorah is my favorite too.
Absolutely.
Godzilla versus
my favorite as well.
Oh my God, it was totally my favorite. And the second thing I was gonna say, I forgot what it was. There was something else she said that. Attack All Monsters is also my favorite of all the old ones, besides Godzilla versus Hedorah. Those are my two favorite of the old ones, even though they were, I think those two were in two different series, though. But anyway.
Well, Godzilla versus Hedorah, or Hedorah, however you pronounce it, was in the United States as Godzilla versus the Smog Monster.
Smog Monster, yep.
And the other one in the United States was, I believe, the one that was called Godzilla's Revenge.
Yes.
And that was the one about the little boy who was being bullied, who fantasized about teaming up with Minya.
And that was my favorite, but it was called Attack All Monster. I remember
originally,
I remember seeing it called Attack All Monsters. So I don't know if it was like maybe Channel 11 got like a different, you know, version of it or whatever. It was the freaking 70s. It was different.
I think Phil still has more stuff to read.
Sorry, go ahead.
I sure do, yes.
No, I just wanted people to know which ones that she was talking about in case they don't know the original titles.
Ben, her husband, actually responded and said that, I didn't say girls don't like Godzilla. I just thought most people I know don't. So he's trying to correct her.
You're out of the doghouse. She married you. Just move on. move on and don't contradict her.
Exactly. A happy wife is a happy life. Don Anelli of the great Horror Mafia podcast, he said, Godzilla and Jackie Chan raised me almost as much as my parents did. Love the genre so much, I joined a podcast to talk about it. Austin Schroyer, I'm not like a super fan of kaiju films, but I do really enjoy mostly the main three Kong films. My favorite kaiju film is definitely Peter Jackson's Kong, and my least favorite is the 98 Godzilla. Travis Maxell Boone, Godzilla to me is my Star Wars. I began watching Godzilla films at a very young age and inspired me to in so many ways, especially in drawings. I just recently saw the new Godzilla film, and I brought my stepson to see the King of Monsters lay waste on the big screen. I was not disappointed. My biggest gripe with the movie is that there are too many fights either at night or shrouded in Ghidorah's storms, but otherwise, I really enjoyed myself, and I can't wait to see Godzilla take down King Kong next year. My favorite kaiju is Godzilla, hands down. My favorite version of Godzilla is his most ferocious, monstrous, and powerful incarnation from the 2016 Shin Godzilla. Nothing can beat an immortal atomic god. My most hated kaiju is probably Gabara from 1969, from the movie All Monsters Attack. His design isn't intimidating. His roar, if you can call it that, is goofy, and all he can manage to do is bully Godzilla's son. He's a limp milquetoast monster. I know this is sacrilege to most Godzilla fans, but I have to give some love to Shin Godzilla and Godzilla versus Biollante. Those are my favorite films in the franchise, followed closely by Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla from 1974 and the original Gojira from 1954. Thank you for covering the latest installment in this epic franchise. Cheers. And then Ben Robbins, Amy's husband, once again wrote, I grew up watching them all. I went to my dad's house as a kid and watched them with him and built dinosaur models while we watched. And then he wrote, my favorite kaiju is Godzilla. Least favorite is probably Jet Jaguar. Favorite movie is probably either Final Wars or Destroy All Monsters. Least is the 1998 Godzilla or Godzilla versus Kong. Godzilla should have won that fight easily. All right. And that's pretty much it. Thank you, everyone. Comments on Sean's emails or any of the posts by the Facebook group?
Well, I just want to throw in my two cents. I don't have a direct comment on any of those, but Godzilla holds an interesting place in my life. I'm not a Godzilla expert, but when I was 13, I actually had a pretty serious thing happen and came pretty close to death, needed a major operation, and ended up in the hospital for 10 days. So I was in the hospital, and my father at the time was playing in the orchestra. And so every evening after he was done with rehearsal, he would come visit me at the hospital. I was also on pretty heavy painkillers at the time. So what would happen is that he would get to the hospital, and one of the local TV stations was having a Godzilla marathon that week. So he would come to the hospital right about the time that the Godzilla movie was starting, and I would have it on, and he would sit with me, and while the Godzilla movie was happening, they would come give me my evening pain meds, and I would pass out halfway through the Godzilla movie. So my dad faithfully would sit there and watch the rest of the Godzilla movie and tell me how it ended the next day. So my father and I still share a bond over Godzilla, even though I may not be the biggest expert on kaiju.
And even though you have never seen the end of any of those movies.
Right.
That's still wonderful.
The one where he told you that Godzilla was elected president of the world, that never actually happened.
Oh, damn it.
I grew up on Godzilla myself. When I was a kid, several things changed my life. One was the animation work of Barry Harryhausen, the stop-motion animator. The other things were some horror movies from the 1980s. And the third was Godzilla films. And I used to watch just about every single one I could get my hands on, from the Heisa series during the 1990s to even the old Showa ones, and even the classic ones like the original. I just really always enjoyed it. I always loved the crazy characters, the weird plots, and whether it's dark and serious or goofy and silly, I just enjoyed watching them. It was always really inspiring, because there's even at their most cheesiest, there was such a sense of creativity and fun to them. And you know, Godzilla, and seeing, you know, Godzilla change in from hero to villain, villain to hero to force of nature to God. It's always been interesting to see the way the character is presented, especially the other kaiju. And you know, so yeah, it still holds a special place in my memories, and I think that will never change.
All right, very good. All right. We can, actually, since we're around here, we got Mike and Abe, so I guess the all of us can talk about our kaiju experience. My kaiju experience was creature double feature in Outer Limits every Saturday afternoon on Channel 56 in the greater Boston area. They would play two back-to-back horror films in the middle of the afternoon, and then one episode of the original Outer Limits. So 5 hours of awesome TV. The horror movies they played were Universal, Hammer, Gamera, and Godzilla, and then the various Roger Corman sci-fi films and things of that nature as well. So I always saw Godzilla, Gamera, all those films continuously. And grew up on them, so I always enjoyed them a whole lot, and always have. And then, of course, King Kong was one of those movies that would be the movie of the year type of thing, like Wizard of Oz or whatnot, that they would play once or twice on, like, NBC, ABC, or CBS once a year as the movie of the week. And so that's how I saw the original King Kong, as well as the Jeff Bridges, Jessica Lange King Kong, and I enjoyed those films as well. So that's my experiences with them. And my favorite kaiju films are probably The War of the Gargantuans. I liked the Gamera, the one where he goes to outer space where the alien woman want to eat the brains of the kids. That's a good one. The Smog Monster, or Hedorah, that's one of my favorite Godzilla films. And then, as a kid, I used to love the Jeff Bridges King Kong film. So those would be mine. Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I know they used to show these a lot on matinees on TV. Channel in New York was usually Channel 11. Showed a lot of them. Channel 5 would sometimes show it, and then sometimes ABC, which is Channel 7, had the like 4:30 afternoon movie, and sometimes they would have like a horror week, or they would have a monster week and something like that, and so you could see some of them there. And it was very hit and miss. There were like ones that, like Godzilla's Revenge / All Monsters Attack, they would show almost constantly, and others, like it seemed like Godzilla versus the Smog Monster, or King Kong versus Godzilla, or just, you know, they showed very rarely. So it wasn't, and there was something like that I don't know if they ever showed. It was an uneven sampling. Like a lot of kids, I was basically interested in the monsters beating up on each other. I was never really interested in all the human stuff. It was like, stop talking about the Venetian prophetic princess and go to Godzilla punching Ghidorah. I kind of fell out. I stopped, you know, sometime, probably college time, you know, or teenager time. I wasn't watching a lot of them. It's just maybe because I think they might have lost the rights. They stopped showing them, too. I remember seeing Godzilla in 1985 in theaters. And I've kind of kept up on it. I've just always been fascinated by the monsters. Rodan, I always liked. I don't know why. I may have been because I had a Rodan toy, which I just saw on eBay. It's like $600. I'm sure mine was not in great shape because he had like these grasping claws, which were perfect for picking up, you know, like action figures. So mine would not have been, whatever value I got from playing from it was well worth the $600 I don't get now. You know, I just like monsters in general, as I've said many times in the past. So I just the more monsters, the better. And so while I don't like, well, it's weird. So like, Miss Rain said the whole, what was the movie? Godzilla Final Wars.
Yep.
It's great because it has all the monsters in it, just about. It's basically Destroy All Monsters times three.
Yeah.
Wild. But the human story, this may sound familiar, is horrible. The human aspect, because they're clearly trying to cash in on like the Matrix and stuff like that that came out around that same time.
Yeah, the mutant shit and everything like that.
Yeah, the X-Men, right, mutants, a lot of people in black leather and sunglasses. So the human story is ridiculous, but you have some of the best kaiju moments, and even just like cameos by lesser known kaiju, which is pretty neat. Sort of like Destroy All Monsters, you had some great kaiju action there. I've been rewatching a lot of these. The Criterion Channel, which I don't subscribe to, has most of the original films, the Showa era films, and Starz also has a lot of them. Not all of them, but many. And they also have War of the Gargantuas in Rodan, and most of those are in the original language. The only one that is in English is Invasion of the Astro Monster. And that might be because, you know, one of the two leads is an American actor who speaks English throughout the whole thing.
I think that's Nick Adams, right?
That's Nick Adams, right, who was also in War of the Gargantuas.
No, actually he wasn't. It was the guy from...
Wasn't he?
The Haunting, the black and white, The Haunting.
Okay.
Film.
I thought he was also in that. All right, maybe. All right, so I know he's in something else I'd seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're a lot of fun. Watch them. Again, the human stories are often really ridiculous, like cartoon level thought process, you know, Saturday morning cartoon, because these things were cranked out fast. Like Godzilla versus Mothra was early 64. And Ghidorah the 300 Monster
incidentally,
was end of 64.
Incidentally, there was a Saturday morning Godzilla cartoon.
Which I was planning on bringing up. I watched that loyally every week, Saturday morning on NBC. And weirdly enough, I could argue ties into this film.
Is that the Godzilla the Animated Series, or are you talking about the Hanna-Barbera series?
The Hanna-Barbera series with Godzuki.
Oh, I remember watching that too, actually, because there's a Boomerang, which showed reruns of it.
Right. Yeah, I watched I was a religious watcher of it. I think I even have it on DVD downstairs.
The one I'm thinking of, they had the remote control where they could just like summon Godzilla.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Well, it was a lot like.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it was a lot like Voltron, how there's an insurmountable problem, and they would never be able to figure out how to beat the monster until they would join Voltron and kill it with the sword. Same solution every week, and every week it took 29 minutes for them to figure it out. The same thing with the Godzilla cartoon. Giant monster, how do we beat it? I don't know, let's wait 28 minutes, and then we'll hit the button and say, fuck it, and call it Godzilla. And that was every week.
So, Mike, your experience with kaijus?
So that just went through that. That's all of it, you know. So, like I said,
Anything else, Mike?
No, that's it.
Excellent. Good show, my friend. All right. And Chrissy, we need you.
Well, like everybody else, I fell in love with Godzilla as a kid because it was, they always had them on Channel 11, which was our local station around here in the tri-state area, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. And, you know, they would have Monster Week at least once or twice a year, which is where they had Godzilla movies all week. And like Mike's experience, there were some they just constantly showed, like that damn Godzilla versus Megalon, which was like the worst as far as I'm concerned. And that was always on Monday. It was like, oh, shit. I would always skip Monday because I'd be like, oh, it's going to be that crappy Megalon again this year.
But Jet Jaguar.
Oh, my God. It was so stupid. But anyway.
Hold on, I like that one.
Oh, I hate that one. But, well, anyway, I have comments to make on that later. But anyhow, for me, Godzilla really, I was bullied a lot as a kid. And coming home from school and watching Godzilla movies, and especially watching him beat up all the other monsters, was really important to me because in a very strange way, it kind of made me feel like, well, look, he's kicking ass. Like, I don't have to take shit from these people. Like, it just gave me courage to go to school every day because every time some kid would pick on me or be mean to me, I would just think, you know what? I could kick your ass right now like Godzilla would do, but I'm not going to bother because you're not worth my time. And I think in a lot of ways, that got me through kind of those brutal years of being picked on. And it was kind of funny because when I was watching this movie, there's this scene where one monster's beating up the good guy's beating up the bad guy. And I was just sitting there thinking, oh, my God, there's a huge bully in my life right now. And that is just me pounding on that bully. Like, I'm so there with you. So that's was my kaiju experience. They were always a lot of fun. I loved Hedorah. I loved Attack All Monsters. My very, very favorite, which I didn't mention before, but I don't think I need to because I truly think it is the best one, is the original. You really cannot beat the original 1954 Godzilla in terms of story, in terms of just representing that perfect 1950s monster movie sensibility. It is, you know, right up there with Creature from the Black Lagoon or The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms or any of those other really good ones. So that was my kaiju experience as a kid, and that's why Godzilla has always been special to me. I loved the cartoon that you guys were talking about. That was the one that had the two scientists, right? There was like a guy with a beard and a woman who was always in a yellow jumpsuit.
With an annoying tag-along kid with the cartoon sidekick. Godzuki.
Yep. Yeah, and Godzuki. And Godzuki was always like, I don't know, really dumber than a pile of owl shit. But but yeah, he really was. He was always getting in trouble. And I do have that one downstairs, or at least a couple of episodes.
He was adopted. He was adopted.
Yeah, well, you know, that's another weird thing I was going to mention later. But that was my kaiju experience, so.
All right, very good. All right, so we could probably say that most of us like kaiju. Kaiju is, I guess, the Japanese word for giant monster, but obviously it includes everything from the 1950s giant monster movie ripoffs, as well as King Kong and so on. All right, so I guess we can go around how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So I'll start, since I'm probably going to be the dissenting opinion. I heard about this film because, as Eric once so wisely stated, I'm alive. So I obviously would hear about this film because,
well, that hasn't promoted. Stopped you before.
Yeah, but this is like a huge title versus, say, you know, an obscure title that was promoted heavily. This one, obviously, everybody talks about because it's a important character similar to Marvel, DC, or Star Wars, or Star Trek. So I heard about this one for a lot. And to be honest, Mike, a lot of times I do hear about films. It's just that I don't know when they're coming out until the day they come out. So this one here, I found out it was coming out couple weeks ago, and obviously we were going to do an episode on it. So I went to see it this weekend. I did notice that the reviews weren't too good, so I was a bit afraid. And sure enough, I didn't like this film at all. I thought it stunk. As I was told Eric, I thought it may be one of the worst films that we'll ever discuss on Dark Discussions.
And I just want to state that the title of this movie is Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and I think somebody needs to sue them for false advertising, because the real King of the Monsters is Philip, who is texting me during the entire goddamn movie from the theater. You monster!
Well, it was a
monster.
I was doing it from.
Lord!
I got up and went into the back. Honestly, the first 30 minutes, I liked the film the first 5 minutes, and then it went downhill from there. And if we didn't have to do the episode, I would have probably walked out. But all in all, I know people love this film. Or at least people that have probably listened to this podcast love this film. So obviously I'm going to be the minority opinion, because I kind of feel more like Sean Fox, or even more so the critics themselves. I didn't really enjoy the film all that much. Eric?
I heard about this movie because, well, we pretty much knew it was coming from the moment the last Godzilla was over. And I actually had a harder time the normal dodging trailers for this, because I swear to God I had to scroll past the trailer for this on Instagram 15,000 times.
Well, that's because you were on Instagram.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. I'm not going to argue with anybody who says that the plot of this movie is stupid, because it is. But it doesn't matter. And if you're watching Godzilla, King of the Monsters for the plot, you're doing it wrong. You're watching this movie for the monsters, and the monsters were awesome. I think that classic Godzilla monsters rendered in modern CGI look fucking sweet, and I enjoyed watching them fight, and I walked out of the movie with a smile on my face. So I like this movie.
All right, very good. Chrissy?
Well, I'm kind of with Eric on this one. I had a lot of fun with this movie, and it's because just like Kong, Skull Island, and the first Godzilla film in this MonsterVerse incarnation here, this rang every single one of my childhood bells. Like, all the reasons I loved Godzilla and other monster movies in the first place. Like Eric, the monsters were fucking sweet, and it had all my favorite familiar monsters, and they felt like old friends to me. It had fire, it had volcanoes, it had sunken abandoned ancient ruins, it had heartbreaking self-sacrifice, it had a complex romantic relationship. It had nice, creepy legends. These are all the reasons. Like, if a film pretty much when I was 12 had all that shit in it, you could tell me nothing bad. It could have the worst story in the freaking world, and I wouldn't care. Because I was like, well, it hit everything I love. I do recognize that there were some things in here that didn't quite make sense. But on the other hand, I mean, I've seen every Godzilla movie out there, and if you're looking for something in them to always make sense, you're kind of out of your mind, because that's sort of a hallmark of the franchise, really. Like, no matter which series they were in, they had lots of things that didn't make sense. You know, they had sexy alien space women that had nothing to do with anything. Sometimes Godzilla was not the same Godzilla in one adventure as he was in a different one. Sometimes people were randomly possessed by Martians. Godzilla had a son that he adopted or something.
Don't forget the space apes.
Yeah, the space aid, right? And how about the one where he like sprang to life from some random cells? Like,
what about this one here though? This one here.
Well, this one here had a few things in it that didn't make sense. But the people that are complaining about that, really, like I said, I don't honestly think are giving this franchise its fair due. And if anything, I kind of wanted a couple of things that didn't make sense more, because that would have really kind of fit in the franchise. I think Vera Farmiga it deserves kudos here, because if she was at all feeling like I'm in this shitty movie, she certainly did not show it. She was as awesome in this as she's been in every serious thing I've seen her do. I loved all the cameos by various people you've seen all over Hollywood. I thought that was a real plus. And I thought that for the most part, the pacing was pretty good. The action and battle sequences and monster fights were not only of an acceptable and appropriate length, but I felt that I really got to see the monsters. Like, it wasn't just a lot of like flash, flash, flash. Like, you really got to see what they look like. And they did keep the story moving forward. So like, we didn't get like a 25-minute battle, which is what all those comic book movies do that I can't stand. They gave us more battles, but they gave us shorter ones. So we got the same amount of battles, but it just was a little bit easier to digest. So those are my thoughts. I did see this in 3D. I have to go with whatever listener wrote in and said you don't really need the 3D to enjoy this. I'm going to agree with that, because I really didn't feel like it super enhanced anything for me. But anyway, those are my thoughts.
All right, very good. Let's go with Abe.
Well, this movie was pretty much, you know, it was advertised everywhere. It was coming along here. It might as well glow in blue radiation. I saw this film twice. One time at Chunky's with my brother, and recently with my father at the showcase. I really enjoyed this film overall. It's got the human elements, and yeah, it's kind of bogs things down. As things are underdeveloped in terms of character. I mean, and you know, that's the thing with Godzilla movies. Just about every single one of them, they're like that. So it wasn't anything new to me. But there were moments where I kept thinking that, you know, certain parts of the movie could have done without these human elements, and I think it would have been a little stronger if maybe the cast was narrowed down. That being said, I really loved the visuals. I thought the monsters were presented fantastic with the CGI and stuff like that. They had their weight and movement, felt like living creatures. The battles, I agree with Christy, they were awesome, but they were done at a length that was much more acceptable. They didn't feel overly stretched out. I absolutely also adore the soundtrack. The soundtrack was a nostalgia bomb right here. Some classic songs, classic themes and stuff reimagined and brought to life to be much, and some new tracks too that are really cool. It's a fun movie. It's a fun movie. And yeah, it's, you know, I think the critics are just kind of examining this movie wrong. It's Godzilla, I think it has to be examined through a different lens than what, you know, is being done here. And you know, if you can get past the human stuff and just enjoy the kaiju, honestly, I think you have a great time. I really like this a lot.
All right, very good. Mike?
Yeah, I saw this, whatever counts as opening night, I saw it the Friday night it came out in IMAX. The audience I was with applauded twice. They applauded at the end of the film. Then they also applauded during the credits, when they gave the kudos to the acknowledgement of the original actors who played Godzilla. If you sat through the credits, you saw that. So this is a good crowd to see it with. I had a little kid that I'm pretty sure is somewhere on the spectrum sitting to my left, and a Japanese man sitting to my right. So it was a weird, weird little mix of an audience. But yeah,
how do you know he was Japanese?
You can tell. It's a Godzilla movie.
All right.
No, it was a fun film. It was, but it has deep structural problems, I think. My issues with the film, I actually don't have a problem with the plot or the story. I think the idea is a good one. It's hard to really, I think, get a human element into a Godzilla film. So I think the concept is fine. I think the execution was very lacking. And we'll get into the more details. The kaiju battles were big. They were brief. I think people would be surprised if they looked that the monsters probably weren't in the movie as much as they think they might have been in the movie. But like I felt like, but some of it, while I liked like how they handled Rodan, it felt more like he had a walk-on part than really having a substantial role in the film. Same thing with Mothra. Mothra comes in like three times in the film and disappears for huge chunks of the movie. Just to appear at a dramatically appropriate moment. The effects were great, but I didn't feel the performances of the monsters had a whole lot of personality. With kind of the exception of Rodan, which I enjoyed. Like, they made a big issue, because I saw it several places when, like, in the week leading up to this, they start, like, they do the press releases, and they start telling, like, little bits of trivia so they can, the reviewers can sneak it into their columns, and one of which was that each of Ghidorah's heads were performed by a different actor, and they all have different personalities, none of which I saw on screen when I was watching it. I think the actors were fine in the roles that they were given. I didn't have a problem with them. I just felt like the story wasn't fleshed out correctly. And yeah, they're thin, but like, it was choppy. I found the editing was often weak. It felt like they may have made a movie that was like a 3-hour film, and they had to knock it down to 2 hours and 15 minutes. And so it felt like maybe they just cut a little bit out of everything, and it just hurt all the storylines to me. But I think the premise of it, you know, how they built on the last film, that was really good. That was inspired. I just think the execution was lost. And I don't know if it was lost in the editing room. I don't know if Michael Dougherty can't write a large-scale film like this, because he also wrote it as well as directed it. I'm not really sure exactly. Yeah, or co-wrote it. So I'm not really sure exactly where it fell apart for me. So it's a mixed response. It is a good monster action, bad human story, with some, I should say, really neat parts. There are some parts I really liked about the human story. But there's a lot of stuff that I don't think they set up and don't pay off well, or that they don't develop thoroughly enough. And I think they were trying to do too much. So, like, you have Mothra twins in this. That they put in there, and they never do anything with, and they never necessarily make completely clear. And other little
things like that. except to kill off Mothra and then to have him come back to the next, come back to the next movie. I think that's the only reason. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that actually at least is keeping with the Mothra tradition, because she tended to die and come back a lot. And the most important thing, of course, is that they ended up destroying Fenway Park.
That was awesome, because we need a new park in Boston. It's a shit park. The friggin' city keeps on preventing it from building it, and so they have to just expand it, and it's nostalgic, but it's not really a good park.
Yeah. And I wasn't even that big a fan of the way a lot of the action was framed, because it would often do close-ups where I would have liked to see more, which I felt they did in the last film, in the 2014 film. They kept a lot of distance because there was a lot of sort of done from the perspective of people on the ground, and you saw it from the distance. You could see the monsters, even if it was at a ground level angle. Here would switch from ground level to really close up to back again. So I could follow the fights. It just didn't work as well for me cinematically. But I mean, I liked it. It was giant monsters beating on each other. That's all I ask, or it could have been more, though.
All right, very good, very good. You're my hero, Mike. All right, so before we get into some topics and then eventually the spoiler, Eric, do we have a wiki? Do we have a wiki?
Wiki!
Sorry.
Jesus.
Bear with me, folks. I'm in the hotel room. All right, the wiki.
And the mini bar is draining.
Godzilla, King of the Monsters. The cryptozoological agency Monarch faces off against a battery of god-sized monsters including the mighty Godzilla, who collides with Mothra, Rodan, and his ultimate nemesis, the three-headed King Ghidorah.
All right, that's good. Mike, don't forget, the hotel has a very good bar as well, so Eric can just go down the elevator and he can get some booze and bring it right back up.
I'm going to need it soon, right, in a few days, shut up.
I would very much like if we can just put a pin in the and make sure in this for the end of the episode, perhaps, is just talking about the Skull Island Godzilla and King Kong thing.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because it does get mentioned a few times throughout. Yeah, but I'd like to maybe put that in its own section towards the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because even if whether the MonsterVerse survives or not, they do have another film coming out because it's already being made. All right, so one thing I wanted to bring up before we get into spoilers and all that, Travis Maxwell Boone, who wrote one of the messages on Facebook that I read, said something that I actually texted Eric as the monster that I am during the film, which is Eric mentioned that he, what do you think of the special effects? The CGI is pretty good, right? And I said, I didn't really like it that much, and not because it was done bad, but for the exact same reason Travis Maxwell Boone said, and by the way, he liked the film a lot, which he said that my biggest gripe with the movie is that there are too many fights either at night or shrouded in Ghidorah's storms. And the thing I mentioned to Eric when I texted him back was that just give me, you know, the old 1960s Godzillas when it was pure daylight and they were fighting right out in clear, sunny weather, and that's what I want.
Y'all need to start eating some fucking carrots, because you start crying anytime something happens at night.
Well, it's almost like, why did they do it? I don't even know why. It wasn't even necessary.
One, you can argue for it just dramatically looks neat, and also it makes it hides the seams a little bit with CGI.
That's probably what
If you want to see daytime kaiju fighting, go watch Pacific Rim Uprising. That was the sequel, you know, and a lot of the battles there happen in full daylight. Probably as a response, because the first Pacific Rim, there were a lot of criticisms of how that was shot too.
Yeah.
Go back, watch the original Godzilla. A lot of the Godzilla stuff does happen at night.
It does.
It was the later films where they would just find, you know, film it in a brightly lit studio.
Tokyo. It wasn't. They were killing Tokyo. It's not a studio. Was it?
Well,
you're telling me, Mike, that Godzilla would destroy.
I was thinking more like the Godzilla versus Megalon era, where they were fighting amongst giant papier-mâché rocks.
I thought that was real.
And the other thing, too, though, about the original one in the 50s is that I think we tend to forget that that was black and white.
White, yeah.
And they probably did a lot of, like, I don't know, maybe day for night shooting or, you know what I mean? They had to kind of light the night brighter because it was black and white.
I'm talking about, like, the Astro Monster and all those. They, you know, Rodan, all those films, they took place in the middle of the day.
Yeah,
you know,
those are guys in suits, you know, that's a little, you know, a little easier than doing million-dollar budget CGI.
I'm not saying whether or not that's the case, Abe. I'm just saying that I like those battles better, where it's daylight and all that, rather than these night, middle-of-the-storm fights. I just didn't enjoy them that much. That's just my point.
Well,
And
Rodan was during the day.
What's that?
Rodan was during the day.
That's exactly right. But then it was the volcano fire and the smog and all that. So, I mean, you're right.
Can I just say, I thought that fucking volcanic eruption was fucking fantastic.
It was really cool.
I really wanted to actually see more of that. I was sad they didn't give me more. But that's just me. I'm a volcano freak.
So I would say that was my main nitpick of the film, was that most of the battles were all fought in inclement weather, darkness, or in cloud or volcano, rather than how I was hoping. Just my personal preference as well.
Okay.
All right. Any other items that anybody wanted to bring up
Before we get into the plot and all that stuff and spoilers and whatnot.
Well, I will say I was really hoping to see this a second time because I found the pacing of the film really odd. And there was a lot of times I felt myself disoriented in following the human story in terms of keeping track of who was on what vessel, where, when were they on the base, where and where they in the world. You know, they have this giant aircraft that we never really get a good introduction to. I don't remember it. Just that the movie is very busy.
From S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah. No, I mean, it did remind me. It's if you're talking about an homage to Japanese stuff, you know, go back to Destroy All Monsters, where they're flying around in the Spaceship X or whatever it's called, flying back and forth. That's kind of an homage, I guess you can argue, to the Toho era of some of the Japanese stuff, but. You know, say I don't know that it was introduced well. I don't think they did a lot of great work establishing it. I think the whole Monarch group, you're right, needed to be trimmed down. They had to do some military porn in this, which has been a big thing for the last, 20 years or so, because they want to get the cooperation of the government so they can get, like, use of, like, the Ospreys and the bombers and the tanks. So you have to show a lot of stuff with the soldiers on the ground, and you have to have a group of hero soldiers, even though they didn't really do anything in the story. They had to put them there. You know, Transformers is one of the more notorious series for this. But I didn't think a lot of that was necessary. I thought it was just weird that they had this giant ship that flies around the world, never lands, never needs refueling, nor do any of the Ospreys that are flying around with it. It's just a weird thing. But at the same time, you know, kind of reminiscent of stuff I'd seen in, like, anime cartoons when I was a kid or some of the old flying monster, giant monster movies. So, you know, whatever. I was hoping that a second viewing would clarify some of the events would be better sorted in my head.
I don't think a second viewing would have cleared that up. No, I really don't. That was one of those things when Phil asked me earlier, and he said, well, what are some of those things in this movie, you know, that didn't make sense? That was one of those things, that they just had this giant flying ship. I noticed it too, and I was okay with it. I was like, oh, look. It's just like when, you know, in whatever movie they had the chick that was possessed by a Martian and they never explained it. Like, I think it's just a hallmark of
it. She was a Venusian.
Yeah, whatever the hell. But, I mean, there are some Godzilla movies where they just have bizarre shit. Like, let's all go into the disco and hang out for 25 minutes and there's nothing going on. It just...
Well, but usually they have even a line of exposition saying, you know, this is Spaceship X. It's capable of flying with a nuclear reactor and never having to land. They'll do something like that. So I was wondering, because there is so much going on in this film, I wasn't sure if I was forgetting something. So whether it would clarify the plot point or not, it would at least clarify in my head whether I missed anything or whether it was just poorly introduced or poorly handled.
There's a lot.
No, I don't think they bothered. I really don't think they bothered. I think they just didn't bother. They just were like, whatever. Yeah.
This is a case here where there's a lot of stuff here. As I said, I think one major issue I had was definitely the family storyline. I think if it had been cut down and more focused on a Monarch, it has more connections to the Kaiju, maybe there would have been stronger human elements with maybe like Zarazara and stuff like that.
Hey, this is where I felt the problem was, is that this is just like a standard Hollywood checklist. Okay, we need divorced parents. We need a child that, you know, will be back and forth between them. We need one of the heroes to be out in the middle of nowhere, and then out of the blue, a helicopter comes down to...
Yeah,
check.
Yeah, and the family plot line is where a lot of those cliches come in there. And I really feel that if that had been eliminated and more focused on a clash between the eco-terrorists and Monarch, maybe we'd have had a little more better character and human bits, because they at least would have had more connection with the Kaiju than the human elements, because the whole parent drama shit there, because there was a point where it's so fragmented because we're trying to balance that point out with all the Kaiju stuff, and And the way it's resolved is very rushed and kind of half-hearted. I didn't really care about it. It was just kind of like, it was one of those moments like in the other Godzilla movies where I'm just like, okay, let's get through this shit here and get back to, you know, what the hell is Godzilla or Mothra doing, shit like that. It was for me one of the more annoying parts about this. Because, you know, you had a cool character like Jonah, this crazy eco-terrorist who wants to try to unleash his kaiju. And Charles Dance is so underutilized. He's barely in this, in fact. He vanishes after, you know, right at the climax. He doesn't do anything except for a little stinger at the end.
Well, and that's why I said at the beginning, I'm not going to argue with anybody who says the plot is crap in this movie, because it really is.
Oh,
it's
terrible.
I just didn't care.
right. Yeah,
I got to see my monsters fight, so that was all good.
Yeah, right. Because, I mean, we have a lot of issues. We have this weird machine that can talk with the monsters. We have Monarch bases in the middle of communist China, which is obviously ridiculous. We have a child that is brought to the monster lab.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so we're talking about one of the best ones I texted Eric was the girl comes out of the underground complex and is like 18 miles away from Boston, and then the next scene she's at in Fenway Park and sneaking into the park, you know. So there's a lot of things like that are just,
yeah, people. Stuff like the warp pipes in the ocean that, oh, there is a hollow earth because we magically teleported 600 miles away, huh?
Well yeah. To be fair though, Phil, when the city's been evacuated because monsters are attacking, security at Fenway's probably a little lax.
Yeah, I'll give you that, Mike.
let me give credit to some stuff to the story. I don't even remember, in case we haven't, spoiler warnings. Monsters fight.
Spoiler!
Right, I like the fact that this takes the premise of what happens in the first film. Right, yeah. Unlike many of the Godzilla films of the earlier era, where a giant monster destroys a city and everyone goes, boy, that sucked, next film.
Yeah, it's basically a reset button every time.
Yeah, they magically rebuild all of Tokyo in 20 minutes.
Well, a lot of those Godzilla films aren't true sequels anyway. I mean, this one here, even though I said it wasn't a true sequel in a sense, it was truly in the same universe, meaning what happened prior is going to be in this. The other Godzillas, they didn't do that. They just... like, they weren't continuous story plots. And, Abe, you're going to bring something up.
Yeah, the Heza series during the 1990s, from the late 80s, had a continuing plot line because they had certain events that actually led up to other things.
Right. I'm really focusing, I guess, more on
the show.
The show one. Yeah, from 60 to 70 to 80 or whatever year it was. Yeah.
Right, like the cells from Biante create Space Godzilla, which results in Burning Godzilla for the Godzilla versus Destroyer. Right, and it's right there are definite plot elements that carry through from one episode to the next. So
and
that's,
there was a
that re- site, that
there was a recurring character, the young woman who was a psychic who had a connection with Godzilla.
Right.
And then, of course, Godzilla Jr., who grows up throughout the film.
Right.
But starts young and annoying, like his previous incarnation. But I like the fact, so you have this family that's kind of torn by this, and they react in two different ways. One becomes infatuated, you know, kind of with the monsters, and one, you know, hates them.
But let me ask you this. Yeah. Were these characters related to anybody in the first film? The 2014 film?
No.
They didn't know.
Right, because I was completely confused because I thought maybe the son was a major character in the 2014 film or something and missed something. Okay, fair enough.
No, yeah. The only characters that return from the original, there were three. David Strahan's General.
Yep.
Ken Watanabe, and what was her name?
Actress, whatever.
No, she was not her.
Oh, you're right.
Sally Hawkins. Sally Hawkins. And Graham.
Yeah.
So they were coming, and some of the Monarch scientists. That was about it. So Monarch is the carrying threat throughout the monster universe. So in the original, the 2014 film, they established that the creatures communicate by echolocation, that Godzilla hunts them through echolocation. So the idea of having a device to communicate with them, and I was going to say the cartoon from this 1970s, the Hanna-Barbera one, comes back here because they basically build the Godzilla signaling device.
Yes, they
do.
So that was kind of funny, is that this is how Americans handle it, is they have to control Godzilla, which is completely the opposite of what the Japanese would do, which is that Godzilla controls everything else, that they're trying to find a way to manipulate it. So I didn't think that was a horrible thing. I think I kind of liked that. I think that was an interesting way to tie this together and go forward. I like the idea that... Vera Farmiga character is sort of the villain of this. Is the villain of this?
She's 100% the villain.
Well, but then they wimp out at it at the end.
Yeah.
Well, but hold on a second.
She's already a mass murderer.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
What I was gonna say, Mike, just getting back to what you were saying about, I like how they dovetailed on, you know, into the past one, even though we didn't know those characters before. I think that one of the themes in this film, because every single film, whether it's good or bad, has some kind of theme in it, maybe multiple themes. Well, other than that, one of the themes this film deals with, which is just about kind of what you were talking about and about Vera being the enemy, is the ever-popular grief. So many movies deal with this theme, and in this in this case specifically, there are comments in here about how grief can turn us into monsters. I mean, if you think about it, Emma, even though she seems to be doing this under the guise of saving the world, she becomes a monster. Like, even her daughter calls her that because she's killing hundreds of thousands of people in this process. And Mark,
until it's her own daughter, then, I must save her, but who cares about
that? Well, let me finish.
Kids can all die.
Please. Yep. Let me finish. Mark, Maddie's father, becomes a monster because he creeps off and starts doing nothing but drinking after his son dies. So he essentially becomes a monster. But this question throughout the film, there's a question, though, throughout the film about what it really means to be a monster. Like, what is the definition of a monster? They did this in the Avengers Infinity Wars, right? Thanos was destroying the universe, but he was honestly delusional in thinking what he was doing is good. So the question here is, I think it's not so much, Phil, like you mentioned, until it's her own daughter. I think that Emma came out of her delusion is what it was and realized that she was delusional. But it's becoming from a place of intense grief. So I just wanted to mention that because I do think that it's not only grief. I think it's the whole question of who is really a monster. Like, we look at Godzilla as a monster, but is he really? Is Ghidorah really a monster if he's an invasive species? You know, there's all these different things. And Kong looked at this too. Kong Skull Island also had this theme running through it.
Well, and Dr. Emma Russell may not be the hero we want, but she's the hero we deserve because humans suck and we all deserve to die. So release the monsters!
What is very interesting, too, is that I did like the idea of the eco-terrorist antagonist. I think that's kind of a very, considering we had this kind of examination of the idea of a balance between human nature and the fact that we are facing these terrible catastrophes of the environment being destroyed. It makes sense that this story to go into this idea of, you know, human beings trying to use drastic measures to try to salvage it. And I do love Charles Dance's kind of chewing Emma out when, you know, this whole idea of everything looking, being clean and painless and stuff like that, as this whole utopia of monsters and man and stuff like that.
Well, that's the thing. Even the guy that she was on, like, he was helping her, right? The bad guy?
Yeah,
even he was like, dude, you're a crazy bitch. Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, because it was her idea. Right, says, this was your idea, not mine.
You came to me.
Chrissy, let me ask you this. The monster that she becomes, and then at the end, you know, she kind of wakes up, or as Mike said, they chickened out in the film. Does it matter if she is okay and becomes quote unquote, oh my God, what did I do at the end?
when she already mass murdered, you know, millions and or hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, legally, no. As for the status of her immortal soul, well, that's up to your philosophy.
Well, and I also think, too, first of all, we assume that she dies, but we never see it.
Well, I mean, no, she's toast because Godzilla.
Oh, because it was a nuke.
It was a nuke. All right.
No. Godzilla.
Godzilla used his nuke.
He used his own nuclear pulse.
Oh, okay. So definitely that was out. Okay. Yeah.
For a second there, though, Chrissy, you got me. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, they could use her and come back next.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking, that she'll come back as some, like, you know, whatever, because that would be very
difficult.
Mecha
Farminga.
But, you know, the interesting thing is, too, Abe, you were saying about the whole eco-terrorism thing. You know, I almost reveled. I mean, if this were like a serious movie, I would be so pissed at the heavy-handed environmental message. I'd be like, oh my God, stop beating me over the fucking head. I get it. However, every Godzilla movie has this message. And I thought it was so overstated and so heavy-handed that it was just a nice tribute to the originals.
Right,
you know?
The first movie and Shin Godzilla, The Dangers of Radiation.
Oh, God. But even,
you know,
going Hedora all the way back,
pollution.
I mean,
But it was more than that. It was also just, like, as Eric said, people suck, and so they were, like, really pushing it. Because the stupid line of the film was when Bradley, whatever his name is, says, "We're just horny, murderous carnivores." And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe they actually had that.
They had some really...
Oh, man, that was so bad.
Well,
really cheesy lines in here, too.
But here's the thing. I mean, spend a little time on Facebook. You will find people like Eric who are sympathetic to these eco-terrorist points of view. And I liked it, and I love the podcast Writers Blockbusters. I listened to their episode on this. They really tear into and tear apart the screenplay. I always recommend that podcast. Listen to theirs. But I think they missed the point of the Vera Farmiga character, because they couldn't understand why did she sign up with the monsters, because the monsters killed her son. And I wrote to them, I said, it's kind of like, you know, when 9/11 happened. When 9/11 happened, there were a lot of people who hated, you know, the Muslims or the Muslim terrorists. But there were also people who said they would never have attacked us if our government hadn't done this. And Vera Farmiga's character, I'm pretty certain, another one thing I would like to catch on a rewatch, had sent something along the lines of, the monsters came because of us.
Yes.
Because we put nature out of balance. We built the nuclear power plant, so they came to us. And so she blames humanity death of her son. It's stupid, but it makes sense to her, just as... Chrissy, you mentioned the Infinity War and Thanos. His plan was stupid, but it made sense to him. Her logic makes sense to her. Now, where it starts to fall apart was that, in my opinion, is that when I wanted to release the monsters slowly, and they all start coming alive at once. How slowly was she planning on releasing them?
How does that make a difference?
Well, yeah, it's, I wanted to kill everybody very slowly and restore the existence. that was bad writing.
Well, there was a lot of weird things too, because there was the thing where they just out of the blue guessed that King Ghidorah was a space alien. It's like, where did this come from? How they didn't have enough to say he was a space alien.
Oh my God! Obviously,
We knew.
Well, they had seen the earlier films.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Phil, when he said that was one of those points, Phil, where I was like, okay, wait a second. Like, I was like, all right, they just threw that in there. And I knew that Ghidorah had come from outer space because I knew the canon
movies.
It was just weird. Space. Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
So space aliens now exist too. It's
basically the whole thing was that the only thing they had to go off on with this Ghidorah being alien was the fact he survived the oxygen destroyer and he regenerated. But they
Why didn't they just have Ghidorah come from outer space? Well, you know, happened in the other movies, and then that would have made sense versus him frozen in Antarctica.
Well, because I think there's a fear that that when you audiences are willing to accept certain things, we've talked this before, I think, and they're afraid that that might have pushed the limit if you just had the alien actually coming from outer space the way that he did in the original Ghidorah, the three-headed monster.
Yeah.
Well,
all right, but I think that would be
also,
better. Yeah, go on, Eric.
No, I was going to switch subjects.
Please go ahead.
I was just going to say, is it just me, or did they imply that Godzilla and Mothra are fucking?
Yeah, they did. I was like, what the hell is up with that? That was weird.
I honestly
and then, they wrote it off as like, it's a symbiotic relationship. And I was like, all right, what is the symbiosis here? Like, when she dies, she sprays him with her magical shit and he comes back to life. I'm not really seeing this here.
That's the Mothra money shot right there.
Yeah, well, you know, that's another thing there, too, that her life force was another thing that was actually a shout-out to Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters All Attack, where she dies protecting King Ghidorah and revives him.
But the problem is you can't make a movie that's all these shout-outs when the shout-outs are in plot points.
Yes, I know that. I'm aware of that. And I'm just saying that that's part of the problem of the script is that it relies a lot on nostalgia and shout-outs to certain kind of things.
You have no grounding for it.
Yes, you know.
Even if you were a super geek, they just come up with this, like, oh, it must be a symbiotic relationship. Oh, Ghidorah must be an alien.
Yeah, but Phil, that's shit that happens in the old Godzilla films, too.
But again, we're, 40 years later, but
I know.
The best one was when they were showing all the pictures of Ghidorah in history. And then they bring up William Blake's painting of the Red Dragon. It's like, oh, for
Christ. Wait, don't they actually... don't they actually say that the legends say it came from
the stars. Yes,
that's where the idea that it's an alien comes from, is that they just take the legend and say, oh, good enough for us, and they run with it.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, I'm also going to say, I'm kind of open to that when you have, again, the world, these things have changed the way people view the world, right? And looked at the world and looked at what's possible. So I can understand maybe people entertaining more wild ideas that maybe we would dismiss out of hand right now. Because you're looking for a rational explanation. Hey, that's one that works just as well as any other. So I don't really have a big problem with that. And again, really what we want to do is move through the expedition as quickly as we can to get to the more monster fights. So sometimes you're going to resort to cliches. Sometimes you're going to resort to an exposition dump. There's a lot of exposition. There's a lot of jumping around the plot.
I can't believe I'm going to be doing this, but to kind of back up Phil.
Eric, we're a team. What do you mean?
That's kind of that's the fault of the checklist he was referencing earlier. Because honestly, I don't think you needed the whole family plot.
No, you didn't.
Thing at all.
I definitely agree with that.
If they had excised that completely, you would have ended up with more time for monster explanations.
Yeah. If you had focused on, as I said, the eco-terrorists unleashing Ghidorah and maybe having them get eliminated or pushed aside because Charles Dance doesn't do much anyways, and then focus on Monarch and the monsters, you would have more time to expand on the creatures, their relationships and connections with each other, and then we wouldn't have all this jumping around and stuff like that.
Now, Eric, I have to ask Eric something. What do you mean you can't believe you're agreeing with me? What's that supposed to mean?
Because when you were texting me, you were coming across as completely ludicrous.
Well, I was angry that I was watching this film.
I think what they could have done, this is about the problem is you have two different stories that are tied together. You have Monarch versus the eco-terrorists.
Yep.
And then you have the husband and the wife and child, the problem being the wife is the head of those eco-terrorists.
Yeah.
I think they had started the film with both of them working for Monarch, separate divisions, one in the China division, one in... And by the way, Phil, I thought about it, you're right. My first thought was, it's kind of silly that they put him in China. On the other hand, after you just watched two major cities destroyed, you have one of those things sitting in your country, maybe you come up with...
But you would think there would be a lot of Chinese... folks there, and there was no Chinese.
You had the one, you had half of the twin, but that's a different aspect of it is who's going to be manning that station.
Right. And you definitely have, you know, obviously intelligence people there from the Chinese right. government. Too.
But anyway, so getting back to it. So you put the father in Monarch to begin with as a monster hunter. You know, he's on, put him on that ship, you know, or in that base. So it's not new to him. And,
or don't have them married and don't have a kid and just have those two people, right? The hero and the villain.
Well, put that aside. I'm saying if they wanted to do that story about the split in the family, if they wanted to do that, and you can also then have him dealing with the split in Monarch of save or destroy the monsters, and his wife on the opposite side of use the monsters to rid the world of people, and then at least you've streamlined the story a little bit. You've contained it. You also have to trim out a lot of the excess characters. Like Bradley Whitford, I think, is a great actor.
Yep.
He does nothing in this film. They say he's there to make snarky comments, but none of
his
jokes.
He's the one that said that stupid comment that I mentioned. Yeah.
Which comment was that?
The one about we're all horny carnivores.
Yeah. Well, he said a lot of things, and I think the original intent for him was supposed to be the comic relief, but it didn't work because it just wasn't funny.
Right, the jokes weren't funny.
I didn't mind that. I was like, whatever, it's fine.
Right,
it's,
like the worst one being where he says, oh my God.
Zilla,
That was awful. It's that's right up there, what happens when a toad is struck by lightning. That's that level
bad
first
X-Men
film.
That's
one of the worst lines of all time.
Yeah,
I did want to ask Eric, so when you guys are done, let me know.
Well, and they keep saying, again, these things that they kept feeding the press leading up to the release. They were saying his character was partly inspired by Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty. And if you've ever watched Rick and Morty, the Rick in Rick and Morty is nothing like Bradley Whitford's character. He is an irascible asshole.
Yes.
And he isn't funny. He is a mean-spirited, sarcastic, bitter, cynical, egomaniac. And that is not what Bradley Whitford was. That character in that movie, that would be funny. But he's not the character that stands there and just makes jokes. He's a guy who's just there and pisses on everything. Right? Yeah. And that's what I would have liked. And so that comment about humans being carnivores, that's their attempt and a bad attempt at being the Rick character from Rick and Morty.
Yeah,
it didn't work.
Honestly,
we're not carnivores; we're omnivores.
You know, I really do wish they had expanded Sarah Zara's character. I actually thought he was one of the stronger points of the 2014 film. He was underused, and you know, this idea of this person who's pursuing and kind of idolizes Godzilla kind of was a really nice reflection of the fans and stuff like that.
Now, who's it? Which character is this?
Sarah Zara.
I read one review which said that he had no purpose in the film. All he did was sit there and say Godzilla. It's like that was from a professional reviewer.
Yeah,
he has a bigger role in the movie than just standing there and saying Godzilla.
I don't know.
I have had some issues with some criticism of this movie too, because like I was telling Phil, he'll enjoy listening to the Slash Film Cast episode on this movie because they tore it apart. But some of the specifics they got into while tearing apart, I was like, wait, what? Because they were saying that, like, they were talking about how the original 1954 Gojira was such a great movie. And then they also were like, Oxygen Destroyer? What the hell's an Oxygen Destroyer? Where'd they come up with that one? It's like,
oh my God.
Did you actually watch the original movie?
Jesus
so.
Christ.
Yeah, that's how they kill them. That's how they kill them in the original.
Yeah.
So,
I kind of felt like what was the character's name? You guys just said it.
Sarazawa.
Yeah, I kind of thought he delivered a line in the movie that was very heavy-handed. I honestly did
just
like
one, right?
it. No, I liked it. It was about it was something like. when we're wounded or the only thing that can heal our wounds is to make peace with the monsters that caused them in the first place. The demons that caused them in the first place. And I really thought that that was kind of a heavy-handed, cheesy line, but I loved it. Because to me, it was just really poignant, and it kind of said everything about that character, because he was the one who had the watch from Hiroshima, remember?
Yes.
In the 2014 film.
Yep.
And that his journey between, because I watched the 2014 Godzilla right before I went to go see this one, and his journey as a character, even though it's kind of shallow and not well developed, and I'll give you guys that, does have an arc where he kind of journeys, he makes peace with what happened in his past. And so Godzilla is not really to him the, oh, you know, all to be worshipped and be praised. I saw Godzilla in his life and why he had so much respect for Godzilla as being a catalyst for his own healing, in that Godzilla was, of course, as we all know, a metaphor for nuclear disaster. That's what he was in 1954's movie. You know, it was a big metaphor for nuclear disaster. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And so when you connect that to Hiroshima and this particular character, and then that moment, I mean, I did not expect to get emotional in a fucking Godzilla film, because really, but when he goes up and he's like, goodbye, you know, and he sacrifices himself, that was the final moment of his journey. That was him making peace with that which had wounded him in the past. And I just thought that was a really amazing moment. Yeah, but I liked it.
But Chris, you see, I didn't like it because it was the checklist again. The character that sacrifices himself, and you know,
but there is a point though. You keep saying the checklist that Hollywood needs. However, there are certain things that you do need in certain types of films. Regardless, okay, when you have a cheesy romance, okay, you need to have the best friend character that's kind of the foil. You need, otherwise it doesn't work. You need to have the, you know, the asshole ex-boyfriend. You need to have the girl who's an idealist and is going to go through her, or who's bitter and is going to go through her change. There are certain checklists that are story related, and in big movie, and you need them, and in big movies like this, you almost have to have one of those characters that does the self-sacrifice. I mean, in Deep Blue Sea they had it, but he wasn't consciously doing it. It was beaten by the shark. Like, you still had it, that great moment everybody talks about where he's given the big speech and he gets eaten. But that was, you have to have that sometimes.
I think what would have worked well for me for this is and I really like the Watanabe character, so I kind of would like to see him continue.
Yeah, me too.
And unfortunately, the girl provides a problem for this, because that's why they wouldn't do it. Is have it be the father who sacrifices himself, right? Because that's his arc. His arc is getting over his anger at the monsters.
Coming to respect them and appreciate
them, and have him sacrifice himself to save Godzilla, which completes kind of his arc to save the world.
That's a really good point.
That is
a really good point.
Because honestly, that would have actually completed him.
You heard it. Which father? Chandler's character?
But
there was no way they were gonna he was gonna do that, because he wanted to be with his daughter.
Well, they wouldn't do that, because they would never write a story where they orphan off the girl, right? So they wouldn't. So no, they wouldn't do that in Hollywood.
Now,
but I'm saying that would have been, to me, a more powerful turn, and then that has the advantage of removing the major human character element off the board, and completely leaves the monster element to dominate the last 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
I like Abe's idea better, though, which is just have the villain, whether it's the woman or Charles Dance or both, and Monarch, and get rid of the whole family dynamic completely.
Honestly, you know, there's so many ways it could have done. I feel like they were trying to toss up two big things at once.
I definitely agree with Mike's idea. I also like the idea that if Madison was out of the storyline, it happens between Mark and Emma, and he making that sacrifice to actually save the thing that he hated. Maybe the only kid they had was the one they lost, and that way, that kind of sacrifice was the idea that he was making peace with it.
Well,
There's so many ways the story could have been told that could have been made much more tightly scripted and a little more potent.
Do we even need Godzilla to disappear for like 20, 30 minutes in the film anyway? Because we knew he was going to survive and come back and save
the
day.
Phil, that they do that in every Godzilla movie.
They do.
Yeah, but even like, what if they had, again, the problem is that there were just too many people in it, and there was too many storylines with too many characters to develop any of them well.
Because the cast was really big. You had the main characters. You also had Sarazawa and his assistant. You had a bunch of Martian scientists, most of them who just had nothing to do. You had the villain by Charles Dance.
You had the soldier
characters. You had a few extras here and there. It was a big cast, and honestly,
right, the soldier characters are pointless. Right, they were the military porn. That's why they were there.
Yeah. So honestly, you could have you could have streamlined this to being Warnock versus the eco-terrorists, or Mark and Emma facing each other without Madison being in the picture, and the idea they were split apart by the loss of the one child, or the idea that one was raise the monsters, the other one destroy them, and some other way to make it more tightly knit, because this, I think, part of the reason this movie has its length is because there's so much being put on here.
And weirdly enough, I think if this was a longer film that had time to develop those story arcs, it might have been better, because it does feel so choppy to me. But what if they had simply written out the eco-terrorists, they raise Ghidorah, right?
Yes.
And we know what their plan is. Their plan is to go around the world, raise these terrorists. Our heroes come in, they raise Ghidorah, but Ghidorah destroys the eco-terrorists, right? Yeah. The idea of the villain plans backfires, and they say, well, they've released one more monster, but at least we've stopped them from releasing the others.
And then
you have the oh shit moment, not of the terrorists realizing that the monsters are waking around the world, but of the heroes realizing that
exactly.
That this has gone on, and that they've failed.
Because Ghidorah, without the orca, is able to call the monsters from the sleep. That way, and plus Ghidorah is the main villain. I mean, Charles Dance's character really does nothing. So honestly, you could have had like a minor actor play the leader of the terrorists, have him get killed off with everybody else, and then, as I said, it would have been focused on
it wasn't the mother.
You could have had her written out too.
Yeah,
You could have honestly had her and Mark.
I have a question when we're done rewriting the film.
Yeah.
Well,
because then we got to get into the Kong stuff.
I still have questions for you too that I wanted to ask like a while ago.
Okay, I have one question for everybody. Then Christy asked me your questions. My question is: do we know why it's called Orca?
The whale.
They're originally using it to communicate with whales.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Thank you. I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, but there are a couple of fun Jaws references in here just for the hell of it. I don't know if anybody noticed.
Some questions for Eric so then we could get into the Kong stuff that Mike wanted to bring up.
And then I'm going to tell you the three Jaws references. But anyway, Eric.
Yeah.
One of the things, since you and I are both super duper monster people, they talk about how some of these monsters are on Skull Island, mm-hmm. and we see all these red circles all over this freaking map. And then when the doctor asks for a total, or when she asks for a total, they say, oh, there's 17 around the world. And my thought was, well, what the fuck, man? Skull Island is like loaded with them. There's probably 17 right there. So. It seems as though there should be a lot more than 17, and then at the end we only get to see freaking three of them. It's kind of fucked.
It depends on what your definition is. Okay.
Right.
Don't forget the stick monster, right, from Skull Island?
You know, I love the stick monster.
Hang on. I'm trying to answer the question that Christy asked me. I think it depends on what your definition of a quote-unquote titan is. Is Kong a titan? Are the Stickmunders a titan? Are the Skullcrawler things a titan? Maybe they're not in the total count.
It has something to do with the scale of the creatures. You know,
well, not only that, I mean, we haven't seen a lot, and I'm with Chrissy on this, that it's a little, giant cock tease to say there's 17 of them, and I wasn't necessarily expecting 17.
17 and counting.
And they said since Godzilla, so I wasn't sure if that was including Godzilla or not, but you get the one of the mammoth ape thing with the tusks.
You get the giant
spider that seemed very similar to the giant spider from it's very long legs with the tentacles hanging down, so it's kind of similar to the one from Skull Island.
So there was another
Buto.
The timeline, this is at before Skull Island, maybe?
No, this is at Skull Island, is in the 70s.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Right. So
there was Godzilla, Rodan, Ghidorah, Mothra, Behemoth, Scylla,
Baphomet, another.
Behemoth.
Was I hallucinating, or did I see... I thought I saw for a quick second the giant turtle thing when they were doing the montage of all the...
Gamera.
Gamera's franchise.
That was called...
Yeah, but King Kong's from a different franchise, too, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's...
They have the rights to that.
Yeah, there's... Oh, it starts with an M. I got it right here. It's called Masula, and that was supposed to be based off Anguirus, actually.
What about King Caesar?
Yeah. No, he's not in
it. But here's what I would say. This is something I'm curious if we're going to go through the Kong thing. These feel like two completely different groups of monsters, two different types of ecologies to them.
Right. Right.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not saying that it means they can't fight and you can't get a good fight. It just feels weird that they're trying to push Skull Island onto it. I don't know how they're going to deal with it. But, like, Skull Island was a bunch of monsters that were just animals that had evolved to be very large and were living in a fierce predatory relationship. They came from this underground lair. These are not only massive monsters, if I can, but if you look, but they're also, they have energy abilities. Mike.
You're way overthinking this. None of that matters. They wanted to remake King Kong versus Godzilla, and this is how they're doing it.
Yeah,
right. But what I'm saying I
just heard that Skull Island was originally not going to be part of this universe, and then they added it during production.
I don't know. No, Monarch had been part of Skull Island, so I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, and they also teased the kaiju. At the end of Skull Island, anyways.
Well, but that you could have done if they just teased it by putting it on the end. But Monarch had been, it was part of the whole thing, and Monarch had been in the first Godzilla film. At some point, they decided to put them together because there's been another Kong movie in development for ages. But well, I'm pretty sure that was part of the whole thing for Skull Island.
Because Heaven Universe is the hot thing right now.
Right. But I was saying with the Titans, Chrissy, is that you look at Godzilla has his radioactive breath. The Mutos from the previous film had electromagnetic pulses. Rodan, you could see the kind of fire glowing. You know, you had Mothra with her glowy moth sperm or whatever.
Bioluminescence,
And Ghidorah with the lightning, right? So these seem to be very different types of creatures than the ones you have on Skull Island. So right. I don't know if any of the ones on Skull Island actually would count as being one of the quote-unquote titans or mutos or whatever they are.
They could be as powerful, but you're saying they're not related to the ones that were popular.
I don't know. It just seems like they're...
It makes sense.
Yeah.
They have different design... Like, look from the design philosophy of the creation for their movies were two completely different philosophies, so they didn't seem like they're meant to be together. And right. And I'm fine with that. It's just weird how they're going. I'm going to be curious to see how they manage to mesh them together. And
yeah,
I was thinking because they say in the Skull Island, Kong gets bigger. So is that he isn't full grown yet? All right, so he's going to get much bigger. That's fine. So that helps. He's going to be bigger than. But Godzilla gets even bigger in this film. I had thought maybe they would do something like when he, because he's, you know, we see the burning Godzilla with all the energy inside of him. I thought maybe when he releases all of that, maybe they would end up shrinking him down a little bit, so he'd be a little more cock-scale.
How do you tell though? It's he's so big. I didn't like. They made a comment about, oh, he's been working out.
Yeah,
I don't know. He's still fucking huge. I didn't notice he was bigger.
I mean,
the comment seemed more about his strength being able to keep up with King Ghidorah versus his size.
Right. And this is one of my issues with them making them that big, is that, you know, they keep getting bigger. If you look, there's tons of infographics online of the size of Godzilla over the years.
50 meters to something like 319 meters now or something.
Yeah. Right.
Eric,
six
Eric.
Times big.
What's a meter?
ask the fox.
To moose conversion.
And to the point now where we were bugs before, but now we're gnats, right? We're specks. And so when you have these moments of, like, Ghidorah looking down on a character, on, like, Bobby Brown, I don't buy it, you know? Why? She wouldn't give a fuck. That's like, you know, the bear stopping to have a stare down with an ant. You know, at least before we were, dragonflies. They're still fucking imposing and powerful at 50 meters or 100 meters tall. They don't need to be that much bigger. And I don't care that buildings are bigger now. That's just more shit for them to smash through.
Right. King Kong in the original movie climbing up the buildings is cool because he's not as big as the buildings and he uses them like trees. That's awesome.
Right. But that's also a different thing than, you know, and T-Rex and Jurassic World and Jurassic Park and stuff, they're a different thing than the Godzillas. You want the Godzillas to be building-sized. But while the biggest buildings in the world are now bigger than ever, you still have a lot of those buildings that have been around for 40 or 50 years that are as building-sized as they've ever been.
Yeah.
So you can make it maybe a little bigger, but I just think, you know, it could become – they're just so big now, it's like looking at, you know, at purely
they're literally supersizing their kaiju.
Right, and I think they maybe went way too big in doing this.
Right, you've always said that these creatures couldn't exist because the gravity would kill them.
Christy says she had questions for me. She asked me one question. Do you have more questions, Christy?
No, I think that was the only question
but
Christy,
you have Jaws references.
Jaws references, yes. Well, of course, they mentioned the orca. Okay. Yeah. There is a line, if you listen to it, I caught it, but then somebody else also caught it online because I was Googling it, where they're radioing a captain of another ship. They're in the spaceship thing, and they're getting cleared to land, and they say something like, Roger Brody, you're clear to land or something. So they mention Brody. And then there's that moment where they first enter the sunken city, which I think was one of my favorite visual sequences in the movie because, my God, just give me an abandoned sunken city any day that's beautifully done like that.
It was
gorgeous.
It
was beautiful. But the first thing they see when they get startled is this statue of a face, right? And it freaks them out. It was extremely reminiscent of that moment in Jaws where you see Ben Gardner's head like stick through the broken hull. I was and even kind of the shape that they had, sort of the porthole or whatever they were looking through, it just kind of popped in there like the same way. It was really interesting. And of course they ripped off that moment from Jurassic Park, where the Tyrannosaurus is looking in the truck. They did that with Ghidorah looking at it. Was so obvious. I was like, dude, you just totally ripped off Jurassic Park. Yeah, but that's fine. It works. It was still creepy.
Now, let me ask you this. What was this city underwater? Because it made no sense.
Atlantis. Who cares?
It might as well have been Atlantis. It's basically the old civilization that the kaiju were worshipped in. And it basically it was sunk.
What did they know about it? Because you would feel like they would detect nuclear blips.
No, they got there by going through the fast underwater thing. Subway hollow thingy.
Yeah, the weird hollow earth thing.
The hollow earth thingy that magically transports you halfway around the world every 2 minutes.
That's a fair
point. They said, "Oh my God, we're 600. What was it? 600 miles down? All of a sudden,
so this is like Journey to the Center of the World as well.
Yeah. But it's interesting because the city was cool, and the first thing that popped into my head after I was like, "Oh my God, it's Atlantis! This is so neat!" And I wish we had seen more of it because the buildings were huge. There were still buildings there. I mean, I just think it was cool. Whether or not it made sense, I really didn't care.
It was like the Aztec city,
Mexico
City. Or
well, it all done blown up now.
Yeah, it's all gone now.
It kind of echoes, like you know, in the original King Kong, where they had that city where Kong was worth. And I just thought that was interesting, whether it was intended or not. I just thought it was cool.
Now, one thing I want to talk about was the soundtrack. I really love the way that each of the creatures' themes are handled. Because every single kaiju had a distinct theme.
Well, did people in your theater get excited when they revived the original Godzilla
movie? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool. I was actually taken back to Mothra's theme when she parts the clouds.
Mothra.
When she's by she's glowing and the wings just kind of part the clouds. That was so fucking awesome. I love the kind of Buddhist chants for Ghidorah's theme, and I love the powerful Keigo chanting for Godzilla's theme. They really get some real energy to these themes, because each one's distinct, and they kind of meld together during certain scenes as well. It's really awesome.
Yeah, and Mike, I know, getting back to the idea of each kaiju having a different theme, which I also noticed and thought was really well done. Mike, you had mentioned that they had three different actors to play the heads of Ghidorah. And you had mentioned that, they each had a distinct personality and you didn't see it. I didn't read what you had read, but there were a couple of moments where I did see, and I noticed it in my notebook because I wrote it down when I was sitting there, and I had no idea that they were actors. I just thought it was like CGI, and I said, that's interesting. They have like a little personality thing going on there between the two heads, at least two of the heads definitely had distinct
personalities. One was more docile, kind of toying with the humans, while the other one was, but the middle head was berating it for not fighting.
Yeah.
And there was the one, in the far left was a lot more violent and was actually pretty intelligent when it was, it utilized the power generator to charge it up during the fight with Godzilla.
Yeah, one of the things I was concerned about, another reason I wanted to rewatch it, is because I did see it on an IMAX screen. There was so much to take in, and they did a lot of close-ups of the monsters. I couldn't see necessarily the entire screen or take it all in process, so there might have been stuff I missed visually. So I was kind of hoping to see it on a more of a regular screen, see if I saw more things like that, but I was kind of looking for it with Ghidorah. I never saw it. But I'll definitely keep more of an eye open to it.
Ghidorah,
King Ghidorah.
Yeah, it all depends.
Whatever, we're Americans, we butcher it all anyway, it doesn't matter.
Your languages belong to us.
Yes, there was a moment, for example, when we were in Antarctica, and they had just been...
Antarctic Base number 32.
Which is a reference to...
The Thing, was 31.
I thought 31.
Oh. The Thing is 31, this is the next base over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Next door, yes.
Where there's a different monster under the ice.
Yes. But also what was kind of cool was, so they just got done eating all the humans or whatever, destroying everything, and the helicopter's about to take off, and you see the head on, the head on House Right, for lack of a better term, the head on House Right goes down and starts licking the blood of one of the humans up.
Oh, the ashes and stuff.
The middle head knocks him, like, almost like one of those head slaps. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? We don't have time for this.
Yeah.
Like, you can totally see it. And it so amused me that I wrote it down. I was like, that's cool. I was like, but it's a really quick moment. And if I just happened to be looking at that spot when it happened, and I think if you weren't looking. So, I mean, I'm not saying... I mean, I really want to watch this a second time, too, just to kind of pick up on some more fun monster stuff. I really looked at that volcano erupt, that volcanic eruption again, because that was awesome.
That was sweet. That was awesome. I've actually never seen any of the original Rodan movies, and now I kind of want to because of that. I also, how about the fake-out shot at the end where you, for a second, you think Ghidorah's still alive, but then you realize his head sticking out of Godzilla's mouth.
That was
awesome.
I love that. I was like, this is so fucked up and great.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd actually get to see a monster eat another monster. That was pretty awesome.
It was pretty cool.
And it's cool. gonna be hard for Ghidorah to come back from that one.
Actually, Eric, speaking of Rodan, he really only had one film that was specifically for him, and it was three. Rodan wasn't the name of the specific monster, but the race of monsters, because there's three of them in that movie. But the thing that was awesome about the Rodan movie when I was a kid was the caterpillars, the giant caterpillars that the Rodans eat, that when they wipe out the people in the sewers and shit. That was awesome. That was one of my first scares when I was a kid.
The Rodan is a different was like their second or third, because the three big monster films from Toho were Godzilla, obviously Mothra and Rodan. And I don't remember whether Mothra or Rodan came first.
Well, what about King Ghidorah?
The original Mothra is a fucked up movie. They were dropping acid when they wrote that thing.
It was
1967 or something, right?
So if I'm talking about their solo movies, and then.
Oh, gotcha.
Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, was basically their Avengers film, right? Because that was the first one that brought all three of them together.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Ghidorah never really had his own film. You're right.
And what I like is that Rodan
one of the most characters.
Rodan is the one that I felt had a lot of. Is a bit of a dick, right? So
a bad guy. Yeah,
he's kind of doing it. He's tagging along with what the others do, but like there's the scene in Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster where Mothra is trying, and all this translated by the little miniature Mothra twins, is trying to convince Godzilla and Rodan to stop beating the shit out of each other to beat shit out of Ghidorah. And so Mothra sprays his Mothra jizz all over Godzilla. And Rodan is just like mocking him and laughing at him for being wrapped up in the Mothra jizz, you know. And so there's always been to me this little bit of a dickish attitude with, I don't know why, because it's not a lot, but there's a little bit of a dickish attitude with Rodan. And
he's never really a good guy, right?
I kind of get that sense of him here, so I kind of like that he's like the suck up, right? He goes first, he bows down before Ghidorah, and then he's like, "Oh shit, no, you're my boss. You're my boss now."
Yeah, now you're the new alpha. Exactly. When Godzilla becomes the new alpha, then Rodan is like, "Oh, I am here to kiss
I read something that kind of equated him to the Starscream.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know, because he'll try to fight you, and then he'll lose and be like, "Oh no, my bad, I'm on your side." And then as soon as that boss kicks it, he'll be like, "Okay, you're in charge. I'm cool. We're cool, buddy."
But here's the thing: it was Godzilla the original, then Godzilla Raids Again, which was the first appearance of
King Kong versus Godzilla.
The birth of the kaiju versus kaiju.
Yeah,
right. And then there was King Kong versus Godzilla. Then there was Mothra versus Godzilla.
I thought it was Mothra first.
Yeah, Mothra was first. Then it was Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, was after that.
Right.
Then it was that lovely disaster invasion of the astral monster.
I like that one.
No, that's a good one.
I actually like that one more.
That one is weird. I like Ibira, Horror of the Deep. That's one of my personal.
I got to watch that. I hated that one as a kid.
Giant fucking lobster.
Whatever the hell it is. It's actually a shrimp.
It's a shrimp. All right, whatever. I love that one.
That makes it so much better.
Japanese,
like, what would be a terrifying giant monster? How about a moth and a shrimp?
Oh, well, it's very funny is that apparently that movie was supposed to be a King Kong movie originally, but they decided to do Godzilla instead. So it would be King Kong fighting a giant shrimp.
Which explains why there's so much of the, like, throwing boulders at him.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. It's been 2 hours in, so maybe we should give our wrap up here. let's see. Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Scancity Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, and a bunch of other places.
All right, excellent. Mike, you do another podcast and a blog and all this stuff?
Yeah, I do. A couple of spinoff podcasts, which are for this of the Dark Discussions podcast with you and Eric. We do Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, and hopefully that'll be returning. It's a Westworld podcast that will hopefully return in 2020 when the HBO TV series returns for season 3. And we also have done 2 seasons of Searching for American Gods for the Starz TV show, which is currently on hiatus, so that show is on hiatus as well. And then I have my own blog, which is Unnatural Selections, www.unnaturalselections.com.
All right, very good. Chrissy, you do things. You actually just had a release.
I did. I write short dark fiction, and my newest collection, The Shadows Behind, is now out and available. Shout out to listener Michelle Barkley, because she got the first copy and she already read it. She's awesome. But anyway, you can find out more about me at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com.
And Chrissy, you have a banner that you could use as like a blanket?
Oh my God. So I ordered this banner from, I'm doing a book signing at Howl Caverns. The big great room at Howl Caverns where you buy your tickets to go down and tour the cave and go on the underground boat ride is an enormous room.
Where is this in New York?
It's in upstate New York. It's in Howl's Cave, New York. It's called Howl Caverns. It is a tourist attraction that has pretty much been around since the 1800s. It's really pretty cool. Nathan and I got married there, actually. So it's a big, giant room. And so I'm going to go up there and do a book signing there on August 3rd. If anybody's in upstate New York and wants to come see me, I'll be there on August 3rd. And you can get a tour of the cave and all that. And I wanted a big banner. Well, they were having a sale on Vistaprint, and it was like, I don't know, like half price for this banner, and I didn't realize how big this banner was. And it arrived, and I set it up, and I was like, oh my God. It's like, it's got to be like 7 or 8 feet tall. It's just, it's freaking huge. And it's probably, you could fit 5 or 6 people in front of it comfortably and pose for a picture. It's that big. So anyway, that was kind of shocking.
Hey, I have a question, Chrissy. Is there some reason you're doing this at Howl Caverns? Do you just like it, or is there a tie-in with their book, or what's the story?
Well, one of the themes of the book, actually the theme that ties most of the stories together, is what is a monster? And the monsters that live inside us and the monsters that we have inside us are always chasing us. They never leave us alone. Hence the title, The Shadows Behind. And so I'm very good friends with the owners of Howl Caverns. And they thought that this would be a great tie-in. So okay, I'm good with that. I'm just going with it.
I'm really sorry. I'm going to be down in Virginia for that weekend. Otherwise, I would come.
Oh, that would have been so cool. You would love the boat tour there and everything, too. It's an underground boat tour. It's super cool. And Nathan and I have actually been not spelunking, because that's not really the technical term, but for that particular thing. But it's a guided tour where you basically crawl through these caves with no light and stuff. It's really pretty awesome. So,
Mike, have you ever been on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Also, for me, I have a new short story and a book called In the Shadow of the Mountain. It's a collection of horror fantasy stories. Horror stories that take place in fantasy environments. My story is called The Light Beyond the Churchyard, I think. I forget the title. I wrote it so long ago, and it just got published after the editing process and all that. So you can check that out. It is on Amazon for sure, maybe Barnes & Noble. All right, so let's go around and give our final thoughts. So, Abe, why don't you start?
I really like this movie, despite its flaws. It's got a really fragmented and kind of
really unfleshed out script. There's way too much going on, you know, so it starts to kind of bog things down. The monster fights are awesome. If you're going to see Godzilla kick some ass and see some cool creatures effects, then you'll really enjoy this. It's got a really cool soundtrack, nice visuals, and some nice little shout outs to the other Godzilla films and stuff like that, especially if you're a big kaiju freak, like me. But it is one that you kind of have to deal with the human crap as well, which unfortunately you can't really get past. I would say that in terms of rankings, in terms of strength of the three MonsterVerse films, I would say Kong Skull Island was the more well rounded one. This is kind of stuck in the weird middle, while the Godzilla 2014 was kind of up and down a lot as well. But I think it was a little more small scale in terms of casting and stuff, that was a little more coherent. Still, I recommend if you see this on a big screen, if you love a Godzilla movie. It should be in theaters for a little while longer, but it's still struggling in the box office. So if you're trying to see it as soon as you can.
All right, very good. For me, I really wasn't too big of a fan of the film. It does have a lot of exciting action sequences and stuff, but it was a hot mess, I felt. And so I did not really enjoy it that much. I'll probably, if you want to watch Godzilla films, I'll stick with, you know, Godzilla versus Destoroyah or Astral Monster or something. You know, the Japanese version of Godzilla is what I'll probably stick with.
You would like Godzilla versus Destoroyah because they say it with your accent.
Well, actually, believe it or not, that's how you'd pronounce it. The monster, it's...
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yes. Yes, excellent. Good point, Eric. You're damn right. Yeah. That was a good one. That was one of my favorite Godzillas. But all in all, I didn't really like it that much. Mike?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle. It's a flawed film. I think it's the weakest of the three MonsterVerse films. I really like the original... not the original Godzilla, the 2014 Skull Godzilla, Island? And I really like Skull Island. I don't know which one I prefer. I like them both for very different reasons. All three of them are great visually, right? Have fantastic visuals. I'll give them that. But this really is a choppy, badly edited mess in a lot of ways that I think could have been done so much better if they just pared it down a bit. And you know what, I like Doherty from his previous stuff. I was very excited when we heard he was going to be doing Godzilla, because, you know, here's a guy who understood the monsters and horror films, and just he seemed to have missed it here. So I'm very glad, because it has not done very well at the box office for its budget. I'm very glad that King Kong vs. Godzilla is basically already done, so they don't have much of a choice. They'll release it, and they'll rely on the foreign markets to save it. There just does not seem to be the appetite in the United States for a $180 million monster movie franchise. You know, if they pared this down to $60, $70 million, they might have something.
And we all want to see a Kong versus Godzilla.
I want to see everything. I want to see Godzilla versus everything big.
Yeah.
Just...
Stay Park Monster, man.
I want to see versus The Rock.
The Rock, yeah.
That's right. I want to see Godzilla versus Gamera. If they could break that, similar to like Superman with Captain Marvel. I mean, when you can break that, that would be awesome.
Godzilla versus Mecha Cranston.
Yeah, I got to wonder. I mean, Abe, I know you know, but I'm wondering, like, they showed the Gamera films when we were kids all the time. I have no idea. Yeah, so I don't know, Abe, how many in your generation or after your generation know Gamera as well as our generation does, and I don't think many people in our generation know it as well. They just know it's the big turtle thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, Gamera's kind of the odd child of the kaiju world. He has some good ones though. The Gamera 1990 trilogy
Right.
It's pretty pretty awesome. I actually have all the Gamera films on this movie set here.
Hey, but it seems like King Kong versus Godzilla is like Batman versus Superman, and this, it's like Godzilla versus Gamera feels more like Superman versus Aquaman. It just seems like,
it's too weird. Yeah, it's too off right there. And the problem is, in order for something like that to be built up, Gamera needs more like relevance. He needs more of a presence in the movie world, because unfortunately, he hasn't had a movie in a while.
Right, and that's something I would love to see them do, because Toho gets the rights back to make the movies after Kong vs. Godzilla. So I could see the Japan doing it.
Wait a minute.
So who's giving their final thoughts?
We need Eric to give his final thoughts.
Yeah. Eric, and then I think I have to go too. But
yes, Chrissy too. Yes.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Godzilla King of the Monsters. It has some script issues for sure, but I don't care. I got giant fighting monsters with awesome CGI, so I'm a happy dude. And I'll watch Kong vs. Godzilla when it comes out.
Excellent. Chrissy?
Well, I would pretty much agree with everybody tonight. I really don't disagree, even with people who said, you know, the negative things about this movie. I agree, too. I think this movie is really a mishmash. I'm going to be on the same page as Eric. If you like monsters and you want to go be a kid again and have some fun, then definitely go see this. But please don't expect decent story. Please don't expect high art, because you're not going to get it. Just go for the party. Go for the volcano. Go for the sunken city. And go for the really awesome monsters. Just one quick note, Abe. I just found something that says Gamera 2016 trailer in HD.
Really?
So I have no idea what that is, but you might want to look that up.
All right. Probably a concept thing or a fan trailer.
Thing, I don't know.
But yeah.
It's possible.
Whatever. We'll check it out.
Well, either way, we're all friends here, whether we disagree or not, even though we could all be killed in Mystic, because we'll be in face-to-face, so we'll have to be careful.
You're
there, but
dead man! You monster!
Eric Webster versus Abe.
Make sure you have your phone, Phil. You can sit back of the theater and text Eric through the entire movie.
That's awesome. Awesome. Jeez. All right. Anyway. All right. So that's Godzilla, King of the Monsters 2019, filmed by the great, is it Mike Daugherty?
Michael Daugherty. Yep.
Yes. Yes. So maybe a step back for his artistic talent, but as we know, he still put up a hell of a action film, even if it has flaws. I guess next week we got Devil's Advocate coming out, so that'll be an exciting one to talk about. This one, Chrissy, you said you have a lot of stuff to talk about on that, so that'll be exciting. And with all that stated, I guess, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in, and let's talk about Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Come back to hear us talk about the Devil's Advocate.